Hello. So last time you were on was IO, right? Our live did yes,
No,
IO.
we didn't end up doing a live show for IO.
It was the day after, I think.
Yeah, because I was stuck on an airplane. It
Yes, scheduling.
was very bad. And
So when was the last time you were on? I'm trying to think.
I think it was Pixel Slate, like Pixel Slate Talks.
Pixel Slate Talks.
Yeah, which would have been like September, like something
Ooh,
like that.
it's
So
not.
I don't think I've been on since I joined on full time.
Since the new year, so this is the first your first one for 2019, is it? Seems
That was the
like.
best of my knowledge. I don't think yeah, 'cause yeah, it must be.
Oh wow. Okay. So let's dive right in. So the big story of this week just happened today, actually, when a tipster sent us a picture of what clearly looks to be a Nokia feature phone running what we assume is an Android variant model optimized for feature phones. Kyle has been tracking this for ages, and we're finally, this is our first shot of the live OS versus what we've previously seen in Chromium. And this is definitely our first picture of the home screen. So why don't you tell us what we're seeing?
So right there on the homepage, one of the most interesting things to me is the placement of a microphone button, which seems to indicate the Google Assistant, but not necessarily. But similar feature phones have had like a physical button that had the Google Assistant on it. So I'm a little confused by Google's like lack of assistant integration on this initial device.
What we can see the basic T9 pad, which is covered slightly covered by a hand,
Right.
but this very much looks like the standard Nokia feature phone arrangement. Down to the keys, the font, to what you pointed out as a distinctive answer and end calls that Nokia historically has used. And unless it's one of those keys that the hand is covering is the voice button, it's kind of odd that that their first party Android phone doesn't appear, well, not first party, but the feature phone running Android doesn't have a dedicated key.
Right, especially considering Nokia has been running Google Assistant buttons on some of their more recent Android phones, like I believe the 4.2 it was, maybe. They got a confusing naming system, but their recent Android phones have featured an assistant button prominently on it. So I'm going to chalk it up to this being a prototype device for now.
Hopefully, yeah. And because they are definitely feature phones as well,
Right.
made by Jio, which is an Indian brand, I believe, that has dedicated buttons. And Assistant actually works really well on feature phones that have limited typing capabilities. So the voice and microphone is definitely a very key feature for developing markets. So what else do we see here? The home screen under it, a launcher.
Yeah, there's a launcher, the app drawer. It really evo it strongly evokes the idea that this is a Google product. Like that Google's colors are seen throughout this. This doesn't seem like something that Nokia is putting together. If this was a Nokia specific product, I don't think it would have that four color app drawer icon there. It just seems strange to me.
Definitely. And we're seeing Chrome. So the
Right.
buttons we're seeing, this is very much like an older Android phone layout before most launchers switch to just a slide up. But we have a row of five icons, center is the app launcher. We see Chrome, which is, it's hard to imagine really Chrome on a feature phone, isn't it?
Yeah, like there's like most of the feature phones that we have right now either have like Opera or the KaiOS browser, which is based on Firefox.
So yeah, it's a very... I guess what we all want to know is what kind of performance is Chrome actually getting? How close is this in power, in features, in functionality to actual Chrome?
Well, they're cutting functionality to make it faster. Like, you literally cannot have more than one tab open.
Oops.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So. YouTube is next, which everybody loves YouTube.
Of course.
Camera icon, which judging from this picture alone, I want to say there's a front-facing camera.
Yeah.
Top left corner, maybe.
That, I mean, it makes sense. There's a cutout for it. I can't imagine what else it would be.
Flash, like, is the other thing, but that doesn't really make sense as a front.
Yeah.
On the front. So
definitely seems like a camera, yeah.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I was just gonna say that the camera is notably not on that almost identical looking phone that we put next to it.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess this is something that Google's pushing in terms of what people would end up using. I think selfies are a universal thing, so that's one way for Google to maybe differentiate itself with a front-facing camera.
Yeah, I don't actually know if there is a feature phone with a front-facing camera in like the KaiOS world or anything like that.
Yeah, nothing comes to mind. And we have one more icon, which you want to tell us your speculation.
Honestly, so this icon it looks to be using Google's colors, the green and the yellow, and it has a fold over it, a little fold over it in the corner, like a like the Files by Google app. So I'm not 100% sure what this is, but my speculation, if I had to take a loose guess, would be it could be related to Fast Share, as Dylan found a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if we found any visual assets to go with Fast Share, but assuming we didn't, this could be the icon for it.
So actually, Fast Share at the moment is using the generic Nearby icon. It's very generic, so it's from what Dylan is able to enable in Google Play services. It's not clear if that's the final one, or that's just a generic icon. But file sharing functionality makes a lot of sense, especially as, again, in developing markets, peer-to-peer transfers are very popular. Peer-to-peer transfers of music, of songs, of videos even, of contacts maybe. This is a functionality that is important and should be there in a feature phone.
Right. And honestly, it could be not faster. It could just be like an app shortcut from the Files app, which is why it has that little fold in it. It could just be borrowing from Files because it is Files.
Yeah. And speaking of borrowing, I guess the big question here is how much is this Android? And how much is this similar to the Android that most people are familiar with on phones? I think your digging has some suggestions at what version of the OS this is running.
Yeah, the last demonstration that we saw of this that gave any hints of what type of Android it was running showed Android Oreo, which is shocking right now, just considering, you know, Pi has long been available and Google's long been working with Pi, and Q is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Even Android Go has already hit Pi. It doesn't make any sense for them to still be working on Oreo.
Yeah.
Now, that could just be one lone developer doing things a different way or any number of reasons like that. But Oreo is the only thing that we've seen thus far.
Yeah. And so I guess one of the reasons we know this is Android is because of the status bar. It is near identical to the older versions of Android. The time is on the very right corner. We see a battery. We see signals, indicators. I think that says 4G, maybe?
Yeah, it looks like it says 4G. Maybe there's a little bit of text above that, but yeah. I can't quite make it out.
Likewise. So yeah, this is our first look at the OS, and I'm still very curious why they're making this.
Right. It doesn't make any sense from a business standpoint, considering they poured money into KaiOS not long ago.
Yeah. So the thing with Android is everybody know OEMs, developers are very familiar with what they can do with Android. There's a reason that smart displays are using Android Things, that Google offered Android Things as an OS for more OEMs to build their smart displays. It's this quantified known thing. And if we're going to take Nokia, for example, they have a lot of familiarity with Android and optimizing and making Android-powered devices. So the fact that it's Nokia, this seems to be like a Nokia device, shouldn't be surprising that they could be the launch partners, per se, for this device. But
yeah,
again, that doesn't answer the question why Google is deciding to do this and why it's Android.
Right. Some of the speculation that people had was that maybe there was going to be a change to KaiOS that brought Chrome in instead. But this looks distinctly different from KaiOS 2. So it's not like that's what's happening here. We're looking at something distinctly Google.
Mm-hmm.
So, but having it be Nokia makes a lot of sense. Nokia's, in the past couple of years, been known to back Google's play.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like they've been pushing Android One harder than most other OEMs on the market right now.
And they know how to do feature phones. They have a very long history of doing feature
Absolutely.
Phones.
There's nobody else that you would want to buy an Android feature phone from.
Yeah. Definitely in terms of a brand familiarity.
Right.
So this device, do you think this will have a Play Store?
You know, that's really tough because sometimes when I'm digging through the Chrome code, they refer to bookmarks and things like that as apps, which is weird to me, but at the same time, kind of not.
Yeah.
Because yes, there's going to be PWAs, and that's going to be like one of the main use cases, but
yeah,
there still should be a Play Store. It should still be able to install APKs of some kind.
When you mentioned PWAs, for that YouTube icon could very well be a PWA versus a full featured app.
The more absolutely, actually, I don't have my Chromebook on me right this second to look, but at that, looking at that camera app, that kind of looks like the Chrome camera icon, doesn't it?
Yeah, ooh, it does. It's the actual camera shape is pretty close to the pixels, but the blue dot is generic enough that could be. Could be the Chrome OS's.
But hard to say one way or the other.
Yeah. Per Google's MO with feature phones, I think the more interesting, the more likely third-party developer scenario is actions on Google. They're just purely assistant apps. That could be the primary development platform. And Google is pretty prominently putting a microphone on the home screen, or what we're calling a home screen.
Oh, yeah. And then there's that suggestion immediately beneath the microphone, too. That could be assistant suggestions.
Yeah. Assist, like I said at the top, assistant and voice works very well on these feature phones.
Yeah, it could be that is similar to the little suggestions they'll show on the Pixel's ambient screen.
Yeah, it's very much, it's very googly, and that's a reason we were confident looking at this, just by looking at this screenshot, at this image of the home screen, that where we have some confidence that this is Google and this is what Google would do. What is that font? It's pretty generic. I don't even think that's Roboto, is it?
I'm not that good at picking out fonts. It doesn't look like Roboto, you're right. I worry that how good Roboto would even look at that low resolution.
Yeah. I think Google Sans, a product Sans, is pretty suited for small displays. But again, the resolution might be really bad. So,
yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it could be a custom built one just for this low res.
Yeah. But also, it's this the home screen, the UI, it's oddly familiar. It's oddly, if you've ever used a feature phone, it's very similarly styled. At the very bottom, there's a bar for alerts, which we assume to be notifications, select, and settings. It's a very standard UI. And I guess I'm somewhat surprised that Google didn't decide to do something to do their own take on OS, but rather stick with common conventions, which makes its sense in its own right.
I mean, looking at it, you're absolutely right. It's despite being very familiar to future phone users, it still looks very googly.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at it, it's a little hard to tell, but I think that select is that same shade of Google blue, and mm-hmm. there's the line across, and that kind of makes it feel material almost. Like there's a little, I can't, like the bottom bar just looks like it's a little slip of paper over the top of it, which has been the goal of material all along.
Mm-hmm. So
it's still, and actually looking at it, looking very closely at the lines, it kind of looks like that suggestion in the center has like a pill around it.
Very faint. Agreed. Definitely agree.
So it still feels very googly while being just familiar enough to feature phone users, I think.
Yeah, so that's definitely... Yeah, that's definitely interesting in the long run. Yeah.
Not what I expected to have land in our tip box today, I'll tell you that.
Oh, definitely. It's, again, we've seen hardware for the first time. It could very well be development hardware. So I don't know at this stage how final this is. I'm skeptical.
It doesn't feel. It's hard to say how final it is because as we noted in the text, there's been changes to the UI across three different screenshots that we've seen of it. We've seen this touchless feature phone for Android three different times, and it's had a different top bar each time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to know what's really final. We don't know that what we're seeing in this picture is even final, but it's at least closer.
Yeah, definitely. So that's, again, that was our very first look at Android and feature phones. And it's exciting, but at the same time, it's so odd. And I don't know how to. I don't know how to really. I really don't know what to think.
Yeah, the trick is that it's not for us. So I think that's why it's so difficult to relate to it.
That's very true. This will very likely not see an American release.
No,
parts of Europe maybe, but that even that is questionable. But as somebody that finds feature phones, it's always found feature phones and their compact nature interesting. I don't know why Google sees the need to do this at this stage.
Yeah, it just goes back to that investment in KaiOS. It seems like I don't know what Google's going to do uniquely. That's the real kicker.
Like, yeah.
KaiOS already has the Google Assistant.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, what they want to get across is the Google Assistant. That's Assistant is the key platform that they're trying to push with this. And the fact that the Android team wants in is somewhat interesting to me. Also, I guess I want to add that so Android Go is getting cheaper and cheaper. And the thing with technology is that the cost will go down. A year from now, within 5 years, maybe, a basic smartphone will be the same price as a feature phone. So I don't know why Google sees the need to make a stopgap measure while they wait for the cost to come down when they have partners.
If you ask me if I wanted to use a proper touchscreen Android Go phone or the same hardware but without a touchscreen and having the keys and the buttons, I would choose a feature phone any day, assuming it's the same operating system like this. So I could see that being, because
really
Android Go phones are terrible. Everything I've seen has just absolutely dogged on Android Go phones. I haven't seen a good one yet.
Sure, but at the same time, it's touch. Touch is the big X opener. It's the good touch makes sense. It's one to one. It's,
but that's the thing. You get a certain haptics back that you don't have on a cheap phone like that. Like you have this. I haven't had a phone that vibrated as well as my old feature phones.
Oh, again, that's down to size, but that's very true.
Mm. Yeah, there's room to do to prioritize different things when you have a feature phone like that.
Yeah. So,
but of course, priority with a feature phone like that is battery life, and we all know Android is not good at battery life yet.
Yeah, it's honestly my suspicion. I thought that if Google were to do this, it would be running Chrome, to be honest, rather than Android.
Right, because Chrome OS gets incredible battery life.
Yeah.
But then at that point, you're literally creating KaiOS again.
Yeah, and maybe there's some, I don't know, will this have games? I don't, again, I think the progressive web apps will be what powers what experiences that most people interact with. And the idea that there's a Play Store to me is surprising. And that developers would want to port. All these feature phone apps are HTML5. And the idea of a considerable mass of developers taking the time to do something with a stripped down version of Android is peculiar, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, on the games front, I do know that it will have games just because we literally got hands-on with Dino Runner.
Yes.
And if this is going to be a Nokia phone, if it does pan out to be a proper Nokia phone one day, it's going to have Snake on it. I'm sorry. It's going to have Snake. So two games. There you go. No,
Snake is horrible. But that's neither here nor there. Have you seen the new Snake?
There's no, a
new.
These
past set of feature phones are running. Nokia didn't even make it. I honestly think Game Loft did it.
Oh, no.
Because it has like these, it's like faux 3D graphics where it's like, it's not the classic Snake by a long one.
Ugh.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, there's Dino Runner. And
yes.
No, I was thinking about games. It reminded me that back at Google I/O, they ran a whole session on developing web games for screens of all sizes. I can't remember the game that they demonstrated. It looked kind of like Minesweeper, I think, but they developed this game and showed working on everything from a feature phone to a smartphone to a desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's like a subtle priority that they're trying to push a little bit.
That would sure be something. So yeah. So this is our first talk, and hopefully I don't know when this launches, or I really have no time frame for when this launches.
No earlier than MWC, I'd say.
Yeah, they might as well get a big audience talk to OEMs. So yeah, that is Android feature phones. The next big thing that also happened today was Google hosted its first Stadia, Ask Me Anything, on Reddit.
Ooh, what a doozy.
Yes, it was a good 2 hours worth, 2 hours worth of questions. And what's your highlight?
My highlight is definitely that they directly addressed, I'll quote it right here, quote, Stadia Pro is not Netflix for games. Mm-hmm. Boom. Like, that was something that so many people were getting the wrong idea about. Everybody was like, oh, it's a streaming service. It must be like Netflix. It must be like Spotify. You pay one fee and you get all the games that are available in the library.
Yeah. And
But that's not the case. That's a broken system that would never work for gamers. Because like Netflix, sometimes a movie will be on there forever and ever, or a TV show will be on there forever and ever, and then one day The Office just isn't on Netflix anymore.
Yeah.
And gamers would lose their minds if that was the case, myself included.
Yeah, especially if you could no longer play a game and it was so on the monthly schedule, additions and removals. So you're buying games or you're doing Stadia Pro, which I think the director of product for Stadia said that the model they're trying to emulate with Stadia Pro is Xbox Live or PlayStation. What's PlayStation's called?
PlayStation Plus.
PlayStation Plus. So right. It's more the technology is more advanced, but the actual model, the actual business structure is a bit conventional.
Right, which it needs to be. There's got to be some part of it that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at least a little familiar. Same thing like the feature phone. It's got to be a little familiar if people are going to ever use it.
Yeah.
Because like there were so many things about Stadia that were so wild that it took this long, you know, months and months after it was first unveiled at GDC for it to finally start to click a little bit.
Yeah.
The haters, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was a disservice for Google to not control the narrative. There were leaks leading up to the March event, so I think this would have been something where Google benefited from if they were able to control the entire story.
Right, but they mixed messages all about was the real problem there.
Definitely. The Netflix for games model was at the same time, the reason people went to Netflix for games was that's the model they're most familiar with in terms of streaming services.
Right. Where this, you just have to think of Stadia as a console. Like you just already own the console.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody owns Stadia now. It's just, do you have the pro membership? And if you have the pro membership, you get the monthly games. Just like if you own a PlayStation already and you pay the monthly membership, you get the monthly games.
Mm-hmm. So free-to-play games was another thing that was brought up today.
Yeah, free-to-play games. They touched on it, but not explicitly. No. Like they mentioned that they'd be open to the idea of free-to-play games. And they said free games will not be on Stadia base, but the way that they said it kind of sounds like they're just repeating that Stadia base doesn't get free games like Stadia Pro does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they have a comparison chart, and that might have been what they're referring to, or
right, which doesn't answer the question of can I just for free play a game like Fortnite or Apex Legends or any of those type of games? Can I just log in and play that on Stadia for free?
Yeah, Fortnite is the big question.
Absolutely.
I guess going into this event, we all thought that Fortnite would be available on Stadia. As far back as March, we all thought that Fortnite would be a title on Stadia, and we haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky. Epic's going to want it, but at the same time, they're going to hate it.
Yeah. So that's on free to play games. I guess on the hardware front with the Stadia controller, we learned what Bluetooth will be used for on the Stadia controller, and it's going to be Bluetooth audio. So that you can pair Bluetooth headsets directly with the controller and hear stuff and presumably talk to communicate with people via microphone, but it won't be available at launch, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm thinking that that's tied to I'm wondering if the Stadia controller is going to be able to play gameplay audio, because to the best of my knowledge, no.
In terms of that, like there not being a speaker, or what do you mean?
Like, I'm playing Stadia on my TV and decide that I don't want to play through the TV speakers anymore, so I plug my headset into the controller.
That makes sense. I think that's possible.
But then you have to wonder, is the audio getting to the television and the controller, or sorry, is the audio getting to the controller at the same time that the video is getting to the television?
Well, it's, I mean, has anybody really done a good job of this? I mean, headphone jacks on controllers have historically sucked. There's always lag involved. So maybe Google was able to solve it, but I agree. We don't know how good this experience is going to be, really.
Right. So it makes more sense that the Bluetooth would just be for communications audio, like talking to your friends.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time that I've seen them talk about the headphone jack. I don't think I've seen them talk about the headphone jack in terms of gameplay audio.
Yeah, that would be interesting, actually, how they're going to end up doing that. Ideally, it would be able to do both gameplay audio and communications, because
that would be killer.
Yeah, especially if you're using Stadia on the go, I think it makes sense to have your audio be derived from the headset.
Yeah, I mean, putting this on, I can't hear too much going on around me, even though I can very clearly see my two pets giving each other very mean looks. I can't hear anything going on around me very well. So being able to, or putting this on to talk to my friends, I would lose the audio that's coming from the TV a bit.
Yeah. So yeah, that's...
I guess it would have to be both.
It would have to be both. We got some good launch details about what's happening, what we're getting day one.
Right. They didn't talk about specifically how founder and non-founder names work. I was really hoping that they would give a little bit more details, whether it's going to be like a hashtag system like Blizzard and Discord do.
You mean for free users and what their names will look like?
The non-founder names, yeah. People who come in after the founder period.
After the founder. But they're still Stadia Pro members?
Yeah, let's say.
I think all Stadia Pro members will be able to choose their names without getting anything appended to it. But if you're a Stadia base user, you will have something. I think it says that somewhere.
I thought it was specific to founders.
No, I think they still need something to appeal to the pro. If you're paying $10 a month, I think you probably... One of the perks that Google can still offer you as a late addition is probably getting a name of what's available.
Right. So, but they did share that the founders, in the order that they pre-ordered...
Yeah.
Will be able to claim their names.
Okay, so what time did you pre-order? I'm looking at the email right now.
That's a good question.
I know our colleague, Ben Schoen, he pre-ordered while Stadia Connect was still going.
Yeah.
I waited a few minutes. Oh, okay.
That's because he wasn't married yet.
I had 9:42. I think there was the thing started at 9 o'clock, finished by 9:30. So I don't know. I hope I'm pretty early on the list.
Fingers crossed, but I feel bad for anyone trying to claim common names like John.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, Googlers obviously have first dibs at this right now. So
right, and they even said that in the AMA, like the director of product, Andre, claimed the name Andre already.
We'll be fighting some Googlers for the names, simple names.
Right.
So, let's see.
They also talked a little bit about some other devices.
Yeah, they did.
Like,
go ahead.
Yeah, Shun was pointing out that they mentioned ultra-wide support being in the pipeline or something they want to do, but not something that we can expect at launch, which is actually kind of something that we hadn't thought about up until now. We just thought about the fact, oh, 4K, cool.
Yeah, I think at this stage, I think Google is thinking that they're going to max out on TV users, but right. For actual pro gamers, they have crazy screen setups.
Right. Yeah, with like 5 monitors. Right. Yeah. So no ultra wide support for those, and that kind of they mentioned specifically that they're going to support the most common display resolutions, which means it's not going to be like a ramping thing. Like Stadia is not going to ramp between 1080p and 4K. They're probably just you get one or the other.
Yeah. So, again, early days, which this interview tried to emphasize a lot, that this AMA tried to emphasize a lot. It's still very the November launch. It really seems like they're still trying to make sure they can get a minimum viable product out the door in time for November.
Right. I just hope that this minimum viable product is better than, let's say, YouTube Music. Sure, minimum viable product.
Yeah.
But
I guess what they're really focused on at the end of the day is the technical aspect of whether they can actually do this on scale. So that correctly is their primary concern with this platform.
Absolutely. Like, and you can't test that genuinely without users.
Yeah. So another interesting thing at launch, this is a quote: at launch, you'll be able to manage your friends list, create parties, and use platform level voice chat. Those are the first set of social features that will be coming to the platform. And I think that's a healthy amount.
Yeah, I mean, the only noticeable or notable feature lacking there would actually be text chat. But we all know that's the last thing Google needs.
Text chat. Yeah, if a Stadia social network could be a way to get to an actual one if there are enough people on Stadia.
That's true. I mean, I talk to enough people on Discord, and sometimes people just message me out of the blue on Steam, so... Yeah, it could be a viable platform for them in the future, especially as they integrate it with the other Google services like YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I guess the last thing I should say about Stadia is that Andre teased that there's another Stadia Connect coming up sooner than you think. And ooh, I guess we're all assuming that's GamesCon.
Yeah, GamesCon seems like the most likely thing, but... they obviously aren't going to commit to anything like that, just like they wouldn't commit to E3. Specifically said they would not commit to E3. So, fingers crossed. The one thing that they said, though, is that we won't get a peek at the UI until launch.
Which is an interesting thing in that it makes... the implication is that a lot of it will actually be controlled by an app for Android and iOS versus having an actual web interface. It really made it seem that you'd be able to control resolution from the app, which makes sense on TV, but I'm kind of curious how that translates if you're playing on a Chromebook and a Chrome browser.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that because that would be, I mean, I'd have to look at it again, but I want to say like, you still need a smartphone to play on PC.
Yeah.
If I was looking at the requirements page, I'm going to pull it up again, but I'm pretty sure you'd need a phone to play on.
Yeah, which is a really odd, if you think about it, a really odd setup.
Right. Yeah, I just pulled it up again. Yeah, on a computer, you need the Stadia app for Android or iOS. So yeah, it must all be running through that app. And until that app's ready to launch, we're not going to see any of it.
Yeah, which is a shame. I guess in terms of timeline, I think then one of the things mentioned was how the names and claiming a stadium name will happen in advance of the actual unit shipping in November.
Right.
So
that makes me wonder, like, once we have our name, can we start playing?
I don't think so. I think there's going to be a hard date for availability, maybe. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, as soon as that gets unlocked, whether my Stadia controller is shown up or not, I'm going to start playing on my Chromebook, I'll tell you that.
Definitely, I think most people will. So, yeah, November, that's one thing to look... I still wish it launched during the summer, because that's an ideal season, I think.
Yeah, that's when games are really kind of big, just because people don't want to go outside. Like, I live in Louisiana, and for the life of me, I do not want to go outside right now. It's 93 degrees out. I'm happier in air conditioning.
Yeah, I guess Google has to settle for the holiday season, which is not a bad thing to have.
Yeah, and you know they're going to be pushing something of it from at the Made by Google event.
Yeah, but in terms of gaming, this is the year for Google to launch it, so they don't have to compete with next-gen consoles in Scarlett and the PS5. So This is Google's gaming winter to lose, gaming holiday to lose.
Right. Get their foot in the door now.
Yeah, but this is a year from now. So, like you mentioned, Made by Google, we have some news this week. Very briefly, the Pixel 4, we were sent another picture over the weekend of the Pixel 4 in public transportation. This time around, it was not being hidden in the fabric case, but rather this gray case that actually tried to cover the camera bump. But at the end of the day, we were able to still make it out because the 4 whole arrangement is very unique, and it's going to be very hard for Google to hide this phone.
Absolutely. What do you think about that case, actually?
It's looks pretty generic.
The little cutouts around it, the cutouts for the camera. I feel like I mentioned this on Twitter, but I feel like they made the Pixel 4 easier to spot by putting it in that case.
Absolutely agree. There's just no way to get to not make it obvious.
Right. Because if they had done the square, a traditional square, it could be mistaken for a leaked iPhone or a leaked... I think there's another phone that has the square camera cutout. And yet they decided to specifically circle around the five sensors of the Pixel's camera arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Would it's you use that case?
No, of course not. I don't use cases.
Oh, right.
Because cases are Ponzi schemes. Well, screen protectors are Ponzi schemes. I just have ill will to cases as well. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, we didn't really learn that much. But it was nice to see it again, too. We still don't know about the sizing, unfortunately. Whether this is a Pixel 4 or Pixel 4 XL. So
yeah, I tried to like kind of recreate a little bit like of the like putting my finger where how the finger is arranged on there and seeing how much length there is.
Yeah,
I just can't tell.
It's hard to do. It's
it could be anything.
Yeah, very true. So that's another Pixel 4. And of course, if anybody has images of the Pixel 4, please send them our way. We really do want to know what the top looks like.
The front.
In the flesh. So our tips are open.
Always.
So another thing, and one of the reasons you're on this podcast right now, Atlas. This was news last week.
Right. We got this right before the Android Q Beta 5 launch, actually, just like moments before.
Yes.
So... So we had already seen Atlas once before, a couple months ago, and we had a basic idea. at that time, it didn't look anything like a Pixelbook, though, because all of the evidence up to this point had been pointing to this being the next Pixelbook, mm-hmm. or the next made by Google Chromebook, at least. And at the time, it looked nothing like it. It had a big, ridiculous placeholder that said product name. These things, there were just a lot of things that didn't make sense about it.
Yeah.
But this new leak that dropped last week is actually, it looks closer to a Pixelbook. It's got the right colors anyway. It's got that silver on black kind of front bezel. Design.
I'm going to appreciate a darker looking device compared to the very silver Pixelsoid.
You think the
Pixelbook rather?
I was going to say the Pixel Slate was a gorgeous looking device. I wish it had done better, but I mean that's my personal opinion anyway. I'm intrigued by this. The way that it's designed kind of looks like it wouldn't be a convertible, this Atlas Chromebook.
Yeah. Which is, I've personally never used the convertible. I really don't use my Pixelbook as a tablet. So
part of the Pixelbook's problem was its bezels. The bezels were just too huge for it to look right as a tablet, but every now and then, other than the fact that it's ridiculously bulky, I'll use the Lenovo Chromebook, for example, as a tablet, just because I can. But yeah, this the way that the hinge looks in the previous pictures, Atlas doesn't look like a convertible, which kind of goes back to some of the things that Google has said about their upcoming Chromebooks recently, right? Like I know you had gotten a statement from, or you had heard something about that back at Cloud Next.
Yes, at the session, portability was basically what they're going for. Google laid out what categories they're going after following the Pixelbook and the Pixel Slate. And what they're going for is a real it's more like a Chromebook for everyone, I would say. It's the app is what they're looking for moving forward in their laptop lineup, Chromebook lineup. And I guess not having a hinge, but still having a touchscreen could be a real cost-saving measure.
Yeah, it does seem a little strange, doesn't it, to still have the touchscreen, but not have it as a convertible.
Yes and no, I guess, in that everybody likes touching the screen. So might as well just take the best parts and save a few bucks and maybe make a more mass market device.
Right. I mean, you're saving money more than just the hinge, too, because it doesn't have to fold flat anymore. So you have a little more freedom with the design of the clamshell.
Yeah, in that it becomes a proper clamshell design.
Right, not a convertible. It's an actual clamshell. So you have some freedoms there that wouldn't be there before when you're trying to fold flat.
But again, it's going to be a distinctive departure from the Pixelbook design. So
Greenridge
will be hard to evolution. Side by side, they're going to look a bit weird. Basically,
well, I mean that's going to be true of the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 4, though.
Very much so. So
I mean, two things from the same generation, 2 years apart.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, Google isn't there yet to commit to design, to commit to iterative design. So, oh well.
Yeah. No window, I'm guessing.
No window, which
no, like, no.
To talk about briefly on the Pixel 4 is, yeah, it's going to be a shame.
The Pixel Slate didn't have a window either, though, so I guess that's just a given.
Yeah, that's true. So the other thing is there's been some notable fuchsia stuff.
Definitely. I was blown away by some of the fuchsia news this past month. Like, the biggest is definitely that fuchsia launched a website. Unfortunately, it's not fuchsia.com. It's not, hey, check out fuchsia install today. But it is a Fuchsia developer site, which is the first step along the way. You have to give developers the resources to start thinking about the apps that they want to make and start actually making those apps before they can ever have an actual operating system.
Definitely.
It's just weird that it's a soft launch like this.
Yeah, it was the optics, especially following an I.O. where we had Hiroshi Okaima, SVP of Operating Systems at Android, basically, saying that it's a long-term research project. I believe that was the terminology.
Yeah, he definitely kind of poo-pooed it, as it were. Just said, no, that's, you know, oh, that's just our testing grounds and this and that. I don't know, though. I feel like there's two sets of things going on right now. Like there's the longstanding Android camp, and then there's this new camp that's building up both within Google and without. Like the main Google camp, kind of it's hard to explain, but like,
yeah,
what really showed it to me was at Google I/O during the developer keynote. There was one mention of Flutter at the developer keynote, and that was the most applause during that event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it. So I don't know. I feel like go ahead.
From a historical standpoint, all new, well, I can only speak to Apple's history, but the history of OS development of at least one modern OS in macOS is how Apple had to acquire Next in order to get the foundations of the next generation operating system. It started out as a skunk's works, honestly. A small team being brought into a larger organization within Apple and the time OS 9. So there's the history of Apple, at least, is that we have a small team eventually being integrated into the larger organization and fully taking over. So I guess the question with Fuchsia, if it does become a big thing in the future, how will it be merged into Android, or in typical Google fashion, keep on growing as its own thing in parallel, like you have with Android and Chrome today?
I mean, it's already continuing to grow as it happens. But like you were saying about integration, though, I think that's already beginning. Dave Burke mentioned at I/O that there's already projects that are happening in coordination between the Fuchsia and Android teams.
Yes. Technical underlying drivers, right. Or was it?
Yeah, it was a compatibility layer, yeah, as I recall, between OpenGL and Vulkan, which are these two graphics layers. It's a whole big whatever, but it was an interesting thing that was a collaboration between the two teams. So there's already some integration happening there, and the Fuchsia team is more than willing to take advantage of work being done by other teams too.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same, I guess the oddest thing about two OSs being in the same company is what if Android, on its own volition, decides to modernize? What if at the end of the day, you end up with two competing future efforts? What happens then? Who wins? Historically, it's the one with the traction.
Well, if you think about it, I think there's room for both to coexist, just not in the way that people may be expecting. Android's already branched out into all these other aspects, like Internet of Things through Android Things, feature phones now, Android Go. They're targeting all these low-end devices. So theoretically, they could coexist if Fuchsia was targeted more at the flagships.
Interesting. Yeah.
And there's also the worst case scenario for the Fuchsia project, I would say, is that you know, one day they decide that Fuchsia as a whole, as the grand whole, as an operating system, may not be worth pursuing any longer, but all of the Zircon kernel could perhaps be, you know, have Android be built upon that somehow. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, that's a huge technical job that,
or basically just conceptually just taking the best parts that the Fuchsia team learned and was able to prove is viable and making an OS out of that, stripping it for parts, which is
kind of sad if you think about it.
Definitely kind of sad. And there was one more Fuchsia thing recently.
Ah, right. They added support for a chip. The first of actual smartphone chip that Fuchsia has gained support for. The Snapdragon 835, which, as we know, is the same chip that's in the Google Pixel 2, the OnePlus 6, I think, maybe. Maybe not 6, but one of the recent OnePlus phones, the Essential phone. I think there's a Samsung with it in there, like the S8, maybe. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of phones that are running this chip, but the most obvious one that Google would be looking to support would be the Pixel 2.
Yeah, and have we seen, I guess, in also the with the launch of Fuchsia.dev, have we seen what has the Tinkerer community taken? How has the Raven community taken to this being more publicly out there?
Well, I noticed just earlier today that the Fuchsia community and the Flutter community, they're having like a meetup or something in New York, and there's going to be a speaker there who's going to talk about making Fuchsia apps and running Fuchsia, which I think is really cool.
Oh.
And within hours though of the Pixel 2 Snapdragon 835 post going public, within hours of that, one of the Fuchsia community members and one of our readers managed to get Fuchsia, or a very, 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 very limited version of it, running on his Pixel 2. Now, I think he did that through an emulator on the device, but that's still crazy.
Yeah, it's the power of the open community, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, yeah, this... do you see any more Fuchsia developments this year?
Well, honestly, I think the big event for it would have been I/O. I really was hopeful, but at the very least, they started talking about it more openly now.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be very interesting to see how this goes, or what we hear about Fuchsia running on going forward.
Right. Oh, you know, I think what Fuchsia is really going to be good for, at least on our front, is learning more about Google's upcoming devices before they're ready to talk about them.
Something like that. Yeah, there's a track record of that panning out in our favor.
Right. So we'll see. We'll see when they do or do not launch a new Google Home later this year, or Nest Home, if you rather.
Yeah, that's a whole nother can of worms and a whole nother hour for us. But that has been our show for the week. Thank you for listening. We're on a bit of a summer schedule here. It's still an interesting summer, but until next time, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Thursday and published Friday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can, of course, listen to at our site at 9to5google.com. Thank you, Kyle, for joining. Thank you for our listeners, and see you all next week.
See ya.
Bye.